Hello, my name's Richard Plateau.
And I'm Liz Walker.
And this is the Baked Canadian Takeoff, a podcast about the Great Canadian Baking Show.
Hi, Rich, how are you?
Hey, Liz, it's a late night record, and I'm your baking host co-pilot, Richard Plateau, here to drive you down the soft, smooth, pillowy highways of bread and baking. And if you're just out there trying to get to sleep, or out there late delivering pizzas, or whatever it is you're doing out there, hope you're having a really good night.
Are you using the chocolate plug-in?
I don't know what you're talking about. That plug-in costs over $5,000. I wouldn't spend that kind of money to make myself sound better on a podcast.
Oh, man. I would love to sound better on a podcast. I'd love my voice to be a beautiful voice. Do you know what I, like a really not nasally...
What if we got, like, voice? What if we got professional voice actors to just re-record for us?
Oh, my God. Who would you get to re-record for you? Who would I want? Like, who's the voice inside your head?
Oh, Peter Serafinowicz, maybe.
Covered in sensual Canadian
who's
leather.
I know that
he's,
name.
He's
adorned with
on...
succulent circular buttons.
He's in a bunch of Simon.
Stuffed with moist Morello cherries and Somerset raisins.
Yes, yes.
And soaked in the finest French brandy.
He's very tall. He's got a deep voice.
I know I just said I wanted somebody with a beautiful voice, but I think the voice inside my head is probably Janine Garofalo.
And they have those toilet papers that are like literally like industrial, huge, so that you know, your little eyes light up. You're like, I will have this toilet paper until I have to declare a major. That's how long I will have this. And so I said to my roommate, create a diversion. I've got a raincoat.
So it was chocolate week this week on Bake Off. And the signature challenge this week was to make 24 chocolate sandwich cookies. Natalia made those big walnut cookies and Bruno like humped one down in one bite.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking at those things and those were like a big horse tranquilizer. Those did not look amenable to eating to me. They looked like they would be challenging.
Have you ever had the walnut cookies in Chinatown?
Oh, like the kind of soft bready ones?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love those. I just like watching the machine that makes those.
Me too. I love those.
Do you
but
like
they're also
the,
really good.
Do you like the red bean one or the black bean one or the walnut one?
I like the walnut and potato.
I just want to say our brothers and sisters from the Pacific Rim are not afraid to put weird things in desserts, and I love it.
So watching the bakers make their cookies, and they had to make 24 mm-hmm. identical cookies, is that the cookie... goes in one of two places. It is either a perfect, like your ideal, like a platonic ideal, is split in two. and on the one hand, you have the perfect mechanically reproduced cookie,
mm-hmm.
right? So everything about it is identical and perfect. And then you have the rustic, homey, home-baked, individualized cookies, not perfect, in the way that they look necessarily, but consistent. This is my way of working out my feelings about Liam, I think.
We're verging on the authenticity problem. We're like,
that's right.
In an age where machines can do things perfectly.
And cheaper.
And cheaper. is making something less perfect to show that it was made by a human and therefore more labor intensive a value.
My cookies always look terrible too, so I'm right there with you, Liam. Although he was weighing his cookies.
Yeah,
I do that.
Yeah, you do that for a nice even cookie. He made the honey peanut butter drop cookies, and he miscalculated his batter, so he had to make two batches, and one of the batches was not the same as the other batch.
That's the kind of haphazard thing that would happen to me. So I was really feeling that. I have also made a lot of miscalculations in this life.
Aurora came up to Jasmine and said, tell me about this chocolate moment, which seemed very, very Queer Eye, very Jonathan Van Ness. Tell me about your chocolate moment. What's she doing?
Aurora was all over this episode.
I like those high-waisted athletic pants, stretchy polyester pants.
She was like a really mm-hmm. fun presence mm-hmm. in the tent. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to pause you for a second here. I'm trying to... I need a little more light in here. I'm having some problems with reading my paper.
Just for half a second, my brain thought that me turning on a light and shining it on the microphone would help you.
Thanks, man. I mean, you're already the best, but that would be even better. Okay. Probably hear the crackling of my paper.
Authenticity. Yeah, so Aurora was really quite lively in this episode, really all over the place, as you say.
Yeah, she had all the good lines. I felt that Caroline was just kind of standing around again. She's not being used.
Utilized.
She's not being utilized. Anyway, back to those cookies. I thought we saw some really interesting cookies. I really liked Jody's churro chocolate ganache. Spicy chocolate.
Yeah. Brave choice to make a vanilla cookie.
So she really had to deliver on that chocolate, which she totally did.
Jody and Chris were the only ones that got a real thumbs up on the judging.
Oh, well, I mean, Chris got the ultimate. He got the, I would eat this in a Paris shop.
I think whimsical in a professional way, Bruno said.
That was the Bruno handshake right there. And it also, I think it also points to Bruno's idea of perfection is something that you buy in a Paris bakery. I don't happen to agree with him. Because I've never been to Paris and I've never bought something in a Paris shop. So I have a different sense of what a perfect thing is. You know, for me, I think I do come down on the rustic end of the authenticity bake. I want to know that human hands touched it.
Yeah. What's your favorite store-bought cookie right now?
What's yours?
My occasional cookie is a maple sandwich cookie. But mm-hmm. my everyday cookie is an Oreo. I think an Oreo is close to a perfect industrial product.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with there. Oh.
And incidentally, vegan.
I'm going to say a chocolate digestive. McVitie's. Those are my favorite.
Yeah, that's a good cookie.
The graininess is what really kills me. The sandy texture. That's my favorite. Although my favorite cookie is my own cookie that our mutual friend Alana gave me the recipe for. It's a chocolate chip raisin oatmeal cookie. And I pull that one out when I need to deliver the goods.
Play the hits.
Totally. I'm going to make the Alana cookies.
She's got a small baby. Do you think she listened to this podcast?
She might. She has in the past.
Hmm.
Hi, Alana. Hey, Alana.
I feel like Jasmine's choice of port wine and chocolate was challenging.
Not for me.
Yeah.
I think the combination of port and chocolate's a pretty good one. Although it was a spritz cookie, which means it's got a very delicate and very dry biscuit kind of a taste to it, which I'm not sure would translate mm-hmm. well in those flavors.
A spritz cookie is like a Play-Doh Fun Factory cookie, right?
Exactly. Colin had that pomegranate buttercream.
Mm-hmm.
I once made a pomegranate curd for a meringue.
Ooh, that sounds good.
You know what? The funny thing is that I was making the curd and it was a beautiful, gorgeous color. It was just a gorgeous color. And then I'm stirring it. Mm-hmm. You know, you make a curd, it takes a long time. And then in an instant, mm-hmm. it turned the color of a Band-Aid. Oh, that's gross. Now I have to throw more pomegranate seeds onto it to just distract from the fact that it looks like old pantyhose.
Right.
So when the pomegranate buttercream didn't quite work out for him, I was there.
Yeah. This was the chocolate week, mm-hmm. but in practically every judging, the judges were like, we want more of the other flavor, chocolate and fruit, chocolate and butterscotch, chocolate and peanut butter. We want more of the other flavor. Deliver that.
Except for Liam's cookies. I think they said there was too much flavor. Too many flavors here. What do you like with chocolate? I like just chocolate, man.
Yeah, chocolate's pretty good. I had chocolate on the brain. I checked a couple of my secret chocolate stash spots
anything?
Before this podcast, but I didn't have anything.
There was a revelation in the first challenge, which was the fact that Chris and Colin went to school together and were in the same, in some kind of same program.
Yeah.
As Colin pointed out, he's now in marketing and Chris is a doctor. So, you know, the paths went in different directions in the woods.
So it was like pre-med or pre-marketing or something.
Let's move on and talk about the technical challenge. This was a nightmare, in my estimation.
Yeah, for sure.
Marquise au chocolat. F***ing nightmare cake.
You gotta bleep that swear.
So, like, layers of different things. Like a cake, and then some crunchy...
Yeah, white chocolate pistachio crunch layer.
Oh, that's what that... Oh, I missed out on the white chocolate. I didn't know what that was.
Croquant.
And then, like, a mousse. I've never made a mousse.
So this was a... This was a raw egg mousse. This was like raw eggs and gelatin, and then you put it in the fridge to set. What is there to say about this except that it was a nightmare? Did it look good? Did it look like something you'd like to try?
It looked like something that you would get in a Paris bakery.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question.
That's true. No, I can't imagine myself ever walking through a house or a field or a mall and thinking, God, I just really want to lay my hands on a piece of Marquise au chocolat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
it's not a craveable bake.
I don't think so.
I mean, maybe it's amazing, but...
I'm never going to find out. There was a moment when I think Liam said, whoop-de-whoop.
Yes, that's already been gift. I saw that on Twitter.
What was he whoop-de-whooping?
Turning out his marquee, flipping it over.
Oh, well, no, spoiler alert.
Yeah, Liam had a pretty... Liam's mousse did not hold. He had a very good croquant, but his mousse did not hold, and he had a sloopy marquee.
Yeah.
Who I think had a hit in the 50s.
Jody and Natalie were next. They had trouble.
Top three were Jasmine, Colin, and then Chris. We're down to so few bakers now. We're down to six. Next week is the quarterfinal, then the semifinal, then the final. Like, the judges had harsh words for Jasmine's marquee, but she came in third, which is how it goes at this point in the contest.
When Chris got the top spot for his technical challenge, he really grimaced. Did you watch his face?
I missed that.
He really illustrated how physically uncomfortable pleasure and relief can be.
Tremendous.
Perhaps if you're not ready for it.
If you're unprepared.
Or if you're like, you want it so bad that you think you'll never get it. Like, he really looked like it was a very painful moment of it kind of dawning on him that he had won the technical. It was really, really great to watch. I don't think you get to see that very often. When you see people experiencing a win, we usually just expect them to, like, jump up happily because you're happy.
How could it be bad to win?
How could it be bad to win? And yet that was not the look on his face. Yeah. The look on his face was oh, God. And then it kind of transferred into relief.
Right, yeah.
But it was not triumph.
His first instinct is not that this is a good thing.
Yeah.
Box of Chocolates was our showstopper challenge this week. And I have a question for you, Liz.
Yeah?
Is this baking?
Ooh, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, it's a real question. Is it baking? Because you're melting
stuff?
You
have to cook your fillings, and you have to temper your chocolate, but there's no flour, there's no putting things in the oven, mm-hmm. there's no gluten, there's no having a cute little handprint of flour on your face. I don't know, these are the things I associate with baking.
Yeah, no, it really draws out the question, what is baking? Is it the application of heat? Well, that's also cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's not flour, because there are lots of things that are made that don't involve flour. It's not a savory sweet thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. So the edit was pretty strong on foreshadowing Liam's departure.
Oh, yeah. It seemed like there was no question.
there wasn't even any sort of subtlety about it.
No, no.
He started the box of chocolates challenge by saying that he felt like a fish out of water.
Yeah, and sometimes fish can survive out of water for a little while. So you you see these six boxes of chocolates laid out before you. Which one do you go for? I'm going right for those. I'm going right for those bees. I'm going right
oh,
for
really?
Jas-
You're
yeah,
going
Jasmine's
for the
bees.
Bees.
Yeah.
Jasmine made honey bees with popping candy.
That's pretty fun.
They were pretty cute. I think I would go for the gothic. Colin made a sort of a Halloween gothic themed coffin full of skulls. And a great big heart, and some of them are filled with like red wine buttercream, which sounds pretty sketch, frankly. But I would eat that.
Pretty fun, like hazelnut brains.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. What's the Halloween situation at your house? Are you going out?
Yes, that's not negotiable.
But everyone's of an age to go out.
Yeah, we go. I mean, we're out there for maybe half an hour. Mm-hmm. It's barely dark.
I think my stepson is of right in that awkward pocket where you're too old to go out trick or treating, but too young to go to parties.
Right, and if he goes trick or treating, then he's really tall.
He is tall. Yeah, he's been tall his whole life.
So you get dirty looks when they think you're an adult.
Yeah,
showing up for candy.
What are you just trying to get some free candy here?
Yeah, it doesn't work. No. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't they have like teen dances to go to or something?
I don't think so.
Nothing. Isn't there a high school dance?
Maybe. Nothing he's expressed an interest in.
No. So I think the thing about this box of chocolates challenge, and it actually came up quite a bit. I wrote it down at the very beginning, and then it kept coming back. Making a box of chocolates, whether it is baking or not, is a balance between expectation and surprise.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it's about, you know.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Visually, you're setting up the dynamic of an expectation, and then even with that expectation, you want to deliver some kind of a surprise. So you don't want them to reach for it and know exactly what it's going to taste like. You know, even if you have painted it with, I don't know, candy canes or something.
Right.
You know, you.
But you don't want it to be entirely surprising.
No, that's right. You want it to be gratifying as well.
Crunchy frog.
Mm-hmm. Well, like with Colin's gothic collection, they said it was quite unexpected. That's what Kyla said. She said, it's quite unexpected, but I like the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Although she didn't like his red wine candies.
Right.
So...
There's a real uncanny valley with chocolate. Like if you temper chocolate well, it can look really shiny and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you like decorate it, it can start to look a bit plasticky.
Mm. And then you don't want to eat it anymore.
Right. And then like that's like the better a job you do, the more artificial it can look.
Have you seen those there's like chocolate garlic skulls?
No.
Oh God. I mean, I don't know if it's good or not, but they're so gorgeous and crazy. And the promise of like some sort of black fermented garlic on the inside is frightening.
Hmm.
I don't think you would put it in your mouth with any sense of...
joyful anticipation.
Oh, you know what was a weird flavor that I thought, ooh, I don't think that tastes very good?
What's that?
Was the lime and thyme that
went
inside Natalia's.
Yeah, it rhymes, but...
And actually, I didn't really get the whole theme. She had like a getaway bag?
Yeah, it was like tropical flavors.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, it was weekend getaway, but it was weekend getaway to somewhere tropical, so it was going to be all tropical flavors.
Oh, I thought it was sort of like more like a skedaddle bag. Like throw your bag in the
back.
Oh,
I would like let's do that one. Yeah, let's do the bug out bag.
Bug out bag. That's it.
So you've got some just like pure dark chocolate for energy.
And like these are just the things that were in the glove compartment of the car.
No. Okay, so you're preparing a bug out bag chocolate box. What do you got? You got I don't know, one with like a wick in it, so you can use it as a candle.
Well, obviously you need a lot of protein.
Right.
So tuna flavor.
Peanut butter. Tuna, peanut butter. Yeah, tuna and peanut butter, chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
These are all good ideas. Keep going, keep going.
One of those chocolate candles, as you're saying, so you can light it and have some light.
Oh, one with a gun in it. So I thought Liam, like, they had a lot of fun with Liam in the edit, as we say, but I thought his leaf chocolates looked great. Mm-hmm. I thought they, like, popped out of the mold really nice, and they were nicely painted.
Yeah, absolutely. He got a really nice review on his box of chocolates. He came back stronger than expected. Once again, playing with that line about expectations, because when he went into that challenge, I thought, someone's going to have to set themselves on fire.
Right.
To crash out harder
at
this stage. And nobody did, actually. It was all pretty, you know, it went down pretty well. And Liam's box looked lovely. I would eat those things.
Pre-showstopper, when they were doing the roundup of who's in trouble, who's doing well, one of the judges said something that made everyone in the room in my house angry, which is that Chris is just naturally gifted.
Ooh, naturally gifted.
So obviously he's going to do well. We all being perhaps now adults or former children who have felt the expectations of teachers and parents and guidance counselors were all kind of rebelled against that statement, saying, no, he works hard. He worked really hard to get good at chocolate. He's not just naturally good at chocolate.
Nobody's naturally good at chocolate.
Nobody is born good at chocolate. Appreciate the effort he put in.
That's right.
He's a doctor.
Oh, did you notice that Liam and Colin, in the edit at least, both had claps after they got judged?
Oh, I noticed Liam's claps.
Yeah, but Chris also, or Colin also got some claps as well. Because Liam's claps felt meaningful.
Yes.
Within the edit.
Yeah.
I was like, aw, because everybody really likes him. You can tell.
Yes. Yeah.
When he talked about his own experience in the tent, he said it was really hard.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, I tried to have no expectations and just live week by week, which I thought was actually really charming, because you could see that he wasn't suffering under a burden of himself.
Right. Yeah.
Which I think sometimes ambitious bakers can suffer.
Yeah. I want to say something about the ads we got in the CBC Gem app. We got an ad for the Great Canadian Baking Show. That was pretty weird.
Yeah, because you're already watching it.
Yeah, we couldn't be more watching it.
Maybe, do you have another device? Could you turn that on to the baking show?
I suppose, yeah. I suppose we could all put our phones on it as well.
Yeah. We need our numbers.
Season 2's winner of the Great Canadian Baking Show was Andre.
Mm-hmm.
And he is not in any Robin Hood or Cuisinart ads this year.
He is conspicuously absent.
And So, it's not a condition of being on the show that you have to do ads for Robin Hood afterwards.
No.
And I wonder if he wasn't offered or if he turned them down. I think the latter.
You think that goes along with Andre's character?
I do, yeah.
You think he doesn't use Robin Hood flour?
I think he's probably like, I am a forest wizard and I choose not to participate in late stage capitalism. I was reading a little bit about the production of this season.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of 1 week breaks in shooting this year.
Yeah, it felt like it was a long time. Some of the comments from the bakers were referred to weeks and weeks. Which is more in line with the British Bake Off, where they do it on the weekends.
Yeah.
And in previous seasons, they did it in, like, day after day after day after day.
Yeah.
Which seemed like a nightmare.
For sure, yeah.
Did they bring all the contestants back for each weekend? Or did they keep them all in a hotel somewhere?
Oh, curious.
In North York. So that it would be more like baking summer camp. I don't know. How did that work?
That's a good question. So this week we lost Liam, and the star baker was Chris, and he said that was on his bucket list, was to become star baker. So it's good he had the opportunity.
Hooray! He did great. I didn't want to eat his chocolates. I have to admit. Now you were saying you were really excited by the interesting flavors presented by
Pacific Rim Bakers. Yeah. We could say that, right?
I didn't like the idea of a mango lassi chocolate personally.
No, I could see that being good.
Not I.
If it was kind of like fudgy, kind of like a creamsicle.
But it doesn't matter. He didn't have to impress me. He had to impress Kyla and Bruno. And he did.
I wanted to talk about Dolce de Leche.
Yes.
Which was in Natalia's
walnut cakes.
Signature. Mm. Speaking of industrial things, that's something you can only make in a post-industrial world, right? You have to, like, boil a can of condensed milk in a water bath to make dulce de leche. There's no other way to make it, right?
You can't just boil milk and sugar for a really long time? I'm asking.
Does that work? I am asking, yeah.
I don't know if it does. I think you're right. I think it's got
to
be in
the
can.
I think it has to be, like, kind of pressurized, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, and it's funny. I actually have a can of condensed milk in my fridge right now, which is such a glorious thing to have. And it says not to cook the contents inside the can.
Right.
But people totally do.
Do you know about the bricks of grape stuff you could get during Prohibition?
None of those words made sense, all strung together.
You could get a brick of condensed, semi-dehydrated grape during Prohibition. And I think it was sold as like a baking ingredient or something. And it said on the package, warning, do not add 40 ounces of water to this and then place near a heat source for 2 weeks and then distill to create wine. And I think the condensed milk is running a similar game here.
It's a very thoughtful warning. Next week is...
International Week, where we bake things from countries that are on the earth.
Yeah,
there's a tower. Towers always good television. They can fall over. They might not.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, they've got that Nordic cake that looks like a tree. That's actually pretty cool. I would try that.
Eating it or baking it?
Both.
Nice.
Because it looks like something you buy at IKEA.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Right? Like, you could assemble that. It's going to come with a couple of cans of icing.
Yeah.
And 48 parts and instructions, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Baked Canadian Takeoff. Our theme music is Dog Politics by Elvis Herod. You can find us online on Twitter and Instagram @BakedCanadian. And that's it.